All right. For a lot of you, this is not new material. I have taught this before, but I think it was about 20 years ago. But I don't know. I may have repeated it. I don't think I have, but some people thought I had. So who knows? It doesn't matter. Hopefully we can get something out of it again. And for those who weren't here, maybe they can get something from it. There are some more lessons. This is just the first three, and I'll get the rest of them to you soon. After we do the first three lessons, which are about being a servant, it'll be about the different one another passages, love one another, greet one another, submit to one another, and that kind of thing. So we're going to, if you would, just go ahead and open your Bibles to Exodus 21 before we start. And by the way, the only person I heard from today was Kisa, who did her lesson, had planned to come, but Riker woke up with a really bad sore throat, so she's taking him to the doctor at 9:40 or something like that.
Did you hear? Amy. She had a school meeting today.
Okay.
She had to go to such a meeting.
Okay. Well, it's good to see all of y'all here. Appreciate y'all coming. Okay, so how would people today define servant in our vernacular?
Someone who works in your house.
Okay. Like what?
A maid.
Okay. Anybody else?
Webster says, one that performs duties about the person or home of the master or personal employer.
Okay, so generally somebody who's paid. Okay.
Under the authority of, you know,
okay,
another person
hired. Right. And then we would tend to use the word servant like a servant of the Lord. But, I mean, we get that from the Bible, but we use that in our everyday speech. But you don't, you would hear something like a civil servant or a servant of the government. You might hear that. But generally speaking, it's somebody who is, somebody who serves others in a domestic capacity. Now, in the Bible, it's generally, oh, wait, we're going to get to that in a minute. Oh, first let me say, it's often viewed as a lowly position. People maybe who can't do anything else, so they're going to, you know, either cook somebody's meals or clean their house or mow their yard or something like that. But is that necessarily true? No, it's not. Okay, so let's talk about in the Bible, well, using Scripture, what would you give as a biblical definition? All right, what Pat said was somebody who sacrifices himself for the good of others. Did you have a scripture for that?
Matthew 20, 25 through 28.
You want to read it, please? Okay, so in this passage, it's based on the example of Jesus, correct? Okay, anybody else have a passage? Sandra?
Along with that, Romans 15:8, as Jesus became a servant to the Jews to show God's truthful love in order to confirm the promises given to the patriarchs.
Okay, all right. Let's look at Galatians 5. I'm sorry, I don't know why I told you to turn to Exodus 21. We'll get there, but... Galatians 5, verse 13 and 14 says, "For you, brethren, have been called to liberty, only do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." We'll spend a lot more time in this passage later, but in this particular passage, it's a matter of putting, as Pat said, it's a sacrificial thing, putting others above yourself because of love. And also, service without reward. Do we do it expecting something in return? No, it's supposed to be, you know, it's because what Jesus, our example, because what he did. He came to serve us so that we might have hope of eternal life, and that's not because we were hoping for that in return. That's part of God's plan. But he did it unselfishly, totally unselfish. Somebody had a hand. Nope. Okay.
I put
put Ephesians 5:21 in the top, says be subject to one another. And then if you go down in the passage, it talks about wives being in subjection to their husbands. And then it talks about the church being in subjection to Christ. All three of those words are the same.
As subject, as being
under the authority of, you know. And so, you know, we were talking about the servant up here, you know, being one that's hired. Well, you know, we do it out of love and willingly. And the wives, of course, command, you know, and the church also.
Okay, are you saying that being subject is the same as being a servant?
If you subject yourself to the needs of others and to the care of others, in service to them, maybe not in the same way as a hired slave.
We are going to have a lesson later on being subject to one another, and I do see it as a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Yes, you still have to put them above yourself to do either one, but to serve somebody, I don't think you necessarily have to be subject to them.
No, that's true. That's true.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not getting that exactly right. I do. I think there's a degree of difference, but maybe we'll just talk about that more when we get to that particular lesson.
And in following up on past, I put down Matthew 25. I also put down Matthew 20 that she had. Matthew 25, the final judgment. This passage is saying if you don't serve one another, if you don't feed, if you don't, you know, what give to the needs of, if you don't visit them, which is helping their needs, you won't inherit the kingdom of heaven.
Exactly. And I use that verse in under this question in a little bit different way because I was talking about being interchangeable with slave. Does a slave have any options?
No.
Slaves are generally not for hire. They're bought and sold. But often in the Bible, they are interchangeable. You'll see servant and slave interchangeable. And in Matthew 25, depending on what version you're looking at, you'll see servant or slave. And in that particular case, I believe, like Linda said, that is definitely a position of subjection. If you're a hired servant, you have to be subject, and if you're a slave, obviously. And another thing that I read in Vines was that there are various shades in position. It's not just it's not always just cut and dried slave or cut and dried servant. There's different levels, I guess. And that's where I had Exodus 21:5, which you don't have to turn there, but let me read it real quick. It says, but if the servant plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free. That is talking, in some translations, that uses the word slave. And obviously, he is not a free man. He is not free to take his service elsewhere or hire out to someone else. He is owned by this man as a slave. And this is different from what we live, the kind of society we live. We don't have slaves. So, but we might have a servant. We might have somebody come clean our house. We might have somebody mow our yard. But do we really call them a servant?
We don't look at them
as a servant. No. I look at it as a big help. Just a big help to me. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people view their children as servants. You know, and they obviously have a responsibility to help out around the house, but I do think a lot of parents go overboard with that and just sit on their behinds and do nothing and make their kids do everything when they're not setting an example of, you know, industry or work ethic or anything like that. Does that make sense? That's probably starting out on a whole other subject, but a servant is, in the case that we're going to be talking about it in this class, is somebody who is willingly serving somebody, and not particularly for hire. Yes, ma'am.
It's interesting that in Hebrews 3:5, Moses is called a servant. We do not, when we read about Moses, I'll put it that way, immediately come to my mind that he's a servant, but he was a servant of God.
Exactly.
And so even though we would consider him a leader, he considered himself, and God sure considered him a servant and blessed him.
Exactly. Well, even Jesus is called a servant.
Yeah.
So there is nothing wrong with that word, and there's nothing wrong with being one. And in fact, we need to strive to be one, which we're hopefully going to see in these first three lessons. And then as we go throughout how we're supposed to interact with one another.
Yeah.
And servant being the bottom layer of that.
Paul uses himself, calls himself a bond slave.
Yes, he does.
And refers, I think, to Timothy as you be the bond, you be a bond slave.
And what are they bond slaves to?
To Christ. And so he didn't use bond servant, he used bond slave. So
what? How does that translate to you?
But I need to do what Christ says no matter what, whether right. I like it or not, whether it's
not my choice.
That's right. It's not my choice. I can't say I like to do this, so I'll do it. Just like a slave does not tell his master, I don't agree with that, so I'm not going to do that. Or just say I'm going to do it and not. You're going to pay the consequences. A slave paid the consequences if they were told to do something and didn't do it for whatever reason.
Right.
In
that case, in Paul's, in Timothy's case, it's an attitude. It's like that when Steve preached recently on the master telling the servant to go do a task, and he said, "I'll go," and then he doesn't do it, and the other one says, "Well, I'm not going to do that," and then he did do it because he had a change of heart. His attitude was straightened out. If our attitude isn't what it's going to be, we're never going to attach ourselves as a bondservant to Jesus and do His will. And do what His word is. Know what His word is, so we can do His will.
And you know, both in Moses and Paul's instances, we read they were bond slaves or servants of the God, but in their being that they served the people. Moses even stood between God and the people and said, "Take my life instead," you know, mm-hmm. and the people. And so he did it for the good of the people. Paul also, he wanted to go on and be with the Lord, but he didn't. You know, in just this one instance, and he talks many times about why he's preaching the gospel and for the good of the Jew and the Gentile. And but he wanted to go and be with the Lord, but he says, "No, but if the Lord wants me to stay here, you know, it would be for the good of the gospel."
Right.
And so, you know, he was serving, yes, God, but in that he was serving the sinner.
Yeah, he had set his mind to do that,
yeah.
Whatever the circumstances, yeah. Like Daniel did and some others in our Old Testament history. Okay, let's look at Matthew 20:28 real quick. I had that down because of the way, I like the way it was worded. Pat, would you read that, please?
I'm sorry.
Oh, never mind. That's okay. I'll let Sandra. Can you read it?
"This is the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many."
Okay, so because he was a bondservant for the sake of whom?
All of us.
Right. For us, the sheep. You know, he came for us. And that's why he's serving. It's for our good. Okay, in 2 Corinthians 8, let's turn there because I have, I'm going to make sure, in fact, I just want to read that. One through eight. Pat, are you there? Can you read that?
Yeah, I am. "Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God which has been given in the churches of Macedonia, that in great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for favor of participation in the support of the saints. For this, not as we had expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us, by the will of God. So we urge Titus that as he had previously made a beginning, so he would also complete in you this gracious work as well. But just as you abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge, and in all earnestness and in the love we have inspired in you, see that you abound in this gracious work also. I am not speaking this as a command, but as proving to the earnestness of others the sincerity of your love also."
Okay, what is the prerequisite you may have found more than one to being a servant? What'd they do here? Ma'am?
Desire to help.
Desire to help. Anybody else have something?
I wrote gave themselves to the Lord.
Gave themselves to the Lord. Anybody else say anything worded any differently?
I'm sorry, I put it up. Maybe you said begging. They were begging. They were longing to
to help because they had the love. You know, Paul mentions the love he had instilled in them. And so, you know, out of love, they entreated him, let us help. You know, they wanted to. It was something they had, like you said, said to heart.
Okay. What was Mary's attitude when the Lord came to her and told her what her role was going to be? According to your word. Let it be done to me according to your word. If we can have that kind of an attitude in our hearts, let it be according to your word. You know, let it be in me according to your word. That always has stuck with me. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Sorry. Bam. The wording there, because of her acceptance and her willingness and her the attitude of her heart that, you know, here I am, Lord, do what it is, whatever your will is. And if we can be that kind of a servant where we start and like and have the attitude that these the Macedonians did about begging to be part of this work, begging to help, begging to be to serve these other people who had a need. A lot of times I think we just become complacent and not that we're not serving. Say we're somebody dies or somebody has a baby, we get food over there, but we're not always aware of like maybe under the service needs, and that goes back to maybe not knowing, you know. And if we're not involved, if we're not present, if we're not in touch, then we're not going to know. So I think it's a matter of, you know, seeking to serve, as did the Macedonians. We have to give ourselves to God and be willing and anxious and wanting to serve.
One thing that struck me also in verse 3, they did according to their ability and beyond. So many of us are not even willing to do what we're able to do. These people pushed beyond what they could do.
Right.
And so many times we just say...
Put themselves in want, most likely.
Yeah. And do we sacrifice even our time or our money to help a Christian or other Christians that we know?
Mm-hmm.
Not just helping everybody, I'm not talking about that, but when we know a brother who's really in need, am I willing to sacrifice something I want for something that needs?
I think that's a good point. You know, if we think about what Jesus did, I mean, talk about the ultimate sacrifice. He gave his life. Very rarely, or if ever, are any of us going to be called on to sacrifice our life for someone who's in need. You know, we may know somebody who's donated a kidney or a piece of a liver or something like that. But to lose your life so someone else could live, that's a pretty big concept there. That's a pretty big act of sacrifice. And if you know, so we put ourselves in need, so we aren't able to go out to eat twice this month, you know, maybe we have to cut back on that or something, you know, whatever it is. We live in a very affluent society. Yes, there is poverty, but in our case, we're not, I don't think we have too many here that are suffering. There are some, and if we're aware of that, we need to be watching and waiting and seeing what we can do to help. But you know, people have to be willing to receive as well.
You know, I also noticed there, you know, giving myself to the Lord, that's foremost, like you said. But in that same verse 5, it said, the first gave himself to the Lord and to us by the will of God. You know, we don't have Paul and the apostles among us, but we do have elders, and we do have, you know, those who take the lead sometime, you know, but elders particular. We just had a gospel meeting. It doesn't have to be money. It has to be serving one another, coming together, you know.
Maybe it's just time.
Yeah, it's time. Well, it's effort, and it sometimes is laying aside things that we plan to do. The elders will say, okay, you know, we're going to support these men and everything. Do we do what we can to, you know, to serve in that capacity, just as these people did and helped Paul and his men, but giving themselves to the Lord, they were ready to do as the will of God, as Paul and him directed.
Right. It involves planning and purpose. And you use the meeting as an example. How long have we known about the meeting? They don't just spring meetings on us 2 weeks before. I know places that do that. we're very fortunate that we are allowed time to plan our time so we can make arrangements and be here. Because the Macedonians looked on this as a favor or as an opportunity, you know, they did purpose, you know, their talents or their ability or their money or whatever, which is something we should think about according to ourselves. Toy Robinson one time said that opportunity plus ability equals responsibility. I think that's a really good way to look at that. Because if we let opportunities pass us by, you know, what good is done? Who's helped by that? Romans 12, 1 and 2, we're all familiar with that passage. We can turn there if we want. But what is the metamorphosis demanded here? Transformation.
Did you say 12:1?
12:1 and 2.
Oh yeah.
There's a change. A change is demand. I'm sorry.
Renewing
of your mind. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove that what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. If we're not in that mode of planning and purposing to serve, or you know, whether it's time or money or ability or what, then we need to do some transforming of our mind to get in that mode. Otherwise, we're conformed to what? The world. The world is on a me axis. The world is concerned about me and what's important to me and what I need and what I have to get done. And not that we shouldn't be. I mean, we all have families that we've got to take care of, or our responsibilities. You know, we've got bills to pay. But if we aren't making it a priority to be a servant, then it isn't going to happen. Somebody can't make us do it. We have to make it a priority and make it happen, I guess is what I'm trying to say. All right, number four. Go back to 2 Corinthians 8. Sorry, shouldn't have left there. What in 9 through 11 is stated there do you see as the qualities of a true servant? I'm sorry, say it again.
Christ's example about sacrificial love.
That's there. Okay, what else?
The follow through is the work planned to do.
Okay, I have follow through and perseverance. And before you have follow through, what do you have?
Desire
or a commitment. If you don't make a commitment, you're sure not going to follow through. And all of that is in response to Jesus' example that Sandra was talking about. Verse 11 says, you must complete the doing of it. It's great to think about what you're going to do and plan what you're going to do, but what if it doesn't happen? What good is it if it doesn't happen? He's talking to them about something they began a year ago. They were wanting to do a year ago. And evidently it didn't happen. And he's wanting them to get on with it. You must complete the doing of it. As there was a readiness to desire it, so there also may be a completion. So what I was seeing here was follow through. You know, get it done. Don't just think about it. You know, work toward the end, you know, the desired end. And I think that applies to any part of our life. You know, if we may say we've just come through the beginning of New Year. And you know, it's a time to renew our commitments and our attitude, and to try to get started on a new program or new whatever, you know, Bible reading or prayer or study, or caring about other people and seeing to other people or what anything along that line. What if we thought about having a renewal like that every month, just in case we're slacking off? Say we slack off a little bit through the month instead of waiting a whole year till January 1st to start over. You know, maybe we could plan to get ourselves on a monthly cycle instead of a yearly cycle. I'm thinking of that because that would help me. Because it's, you know, how easy it is to get busy and goals kind of get lost in the clutter of our lives. We just get busy. So Paul here is encouraging them to follow through of what they desired to do, what they wanted to do. He's not castigating them for not not doing it. They have the desire. He knows they want to do it. He just wants them to get it done. Back.
We all have good intentions.
Yes.
When I was a child, I have heard the way to hell is paved with good intentions. Because just because we intend to do something doesn't mean that's pleasing to God.
Right.
Whether we do it or not.
And good intentions doesn't help anybody. Doesn't get anything done.
No, but what I have found that helps me through my life, and I've just restarted that again, is make a list. You know, I think of something, and I intend to do that, but then I forget. But if I write it down, and it's on that piece of paper laying there by on the bar, then okay. Every time you go by there, if you continue to write things down and mark things off, then you're going to get something done.
I have always been a list person, always. But as I've gotten older, I can't remember anything. And so now I have lists everywhere. I have a list by my chair in the living room and on the bar and in my on the nightstand by my bed because that's, you know, if that's when I think of something. And if I, it doesn't stay in my head till I get into the kitchen to the bar list.
What is good that I find, and I don't always do this, on my phone, if I have my phone with me, if I just keep a running list on the phone.
I've tried that, but I'm not good about that. Do you talk it in there?
Yeah, I just.
That's what I'll do because that's quicker than time.
Sometimes it's not spelled right, but it's enough.
You know what it means.
To know what I'm supposed to.
This is it in your notes. In your notes app.
Well,
where do you put it?
You know, I just hit reminders, and it winds. I said, remind me, and it winds up on my grocery list.
So where's your grocery list in your reminders?
Reminders, and I have several lists of reminders, but I guess that's my. I don't know if that's a primary one or what, but anyway. So sometimes when I'm in the grocery store, it'll be, oh, I forgot to do that.
Well, then you need to put it in a different list.
Well, I try to go in there. I try to go and transfer it to the list that I need to keep on. But that way, most of us, or at least I do, my phone's not too far.
Right.
I still have the one on the bar, though, that I write on. And I can transfer it to the phone or transfer the phone to the one on the list.
And I not only do I have different location lists, I have different... kinds of lists, like I have a long-running list of things I want to get done over the next few weeks or whatever. I have a list of quilts I want to make. I have a list of things I need to get done around the house, clean out the pantry, clean out the linen closet, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, list people I need to call, people I need to send a card. Just, I have, it kind of gets crazy because sometimes, I just have a notebook anymore. I don't even have a list, I just keep a notebook.
The thing is, if you didn't keep that, how much would you...
get done.
Things still fall through the cracks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do.
But how many more things for me? I know so many more things.
It does help. It helps me because, my memory is shot.
And that's not good for everybody. That's just.
I know. And some people keep things in their head just fine. I used to know everybody's phone number. Everybody's phone number.
That was when we had to remember to dial
them. I know. I can't remember anything. All right.
Praying for others. This is one thing that I do. After we have the humble messenger and everything, I make the notes on who's sick and who's this and that. And then I go home and I transfer it to my list. I do the same thing right there by my
chair. That's a good idea.
Where, you know, and I've got a phone there or my phone will be there. And I have to, or it's out of my head. And these, you know, the humble messenger, you can't keep all of them, or you can't, you know. Some
right.
people refer to them, put them on the bar, or whatever, you know, and refer to them during the week. Wally makes his little card, and it's up on his desk, you know, or puts it in the phone. He's better at that. I'm terrible at it.
Well, I think a prayer list is especially important, because when I start praying, those names don't always come to my mind.
Right.
And that helps me tremendously. You know, to have that list out of the bulletin. I listen to the announcements, you know, and write down names. Because, you know, they multiply and then the needs change. Or, you know, whatever. It's hard to keep up with if you don't have a written piece of it. Let's look at verse 8 here, which Pat read a while ago. What here, I forgot the question you were talking about. The exact wording. Oh, qualities of a true servant. What'd y'all get out of verse 8?
Shall we prove the sincerity of our love by doing what we're told to do, or what we said we would do?
Okay, right. It proves the sincerity of our love. Joshua 24:14 says, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth. If there's no sincerity, you know, God's going to know, but not that other people can read our hearts, but you know, sometimes I think it's hard to read our own hearts. Sometimes I think we get into the habit of doing things by rote, and we need to make sure that our heart is in what we're doing. Now let's go back up to 1 through 3. I know I'm skipping around. We'll go back. What'd you get out of those three verses? Yes, joyfully. Anybody else?
According to the means.
Okay. What else?
Willingly. And they did all they had the ability to do and beyond.
Right. I put generosity and unselfishness because they gave so much that, you know, it put themselves in need. Which, you know what, I don't know about y'all, but I've learned throughout my life that, or I've seen over and over throughout my life that when I don't think I can do something, maybe financially, and I do it anyway, I've never gone hungry. You know, there's always plenty. I think God is there taking care of us. I think He sees what we're doing. I think He knows what we're doing and watches over us. Romans 12:8 says this, pretty much the same thing. He who exhorts, let's see, this is talking about the gifts that people have differing according to the grace that's given to us. He who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality. So, you know, if we're giving just to give, it's pretty pointless. We need to make sure that we're generous and liberal and unselfish. And, like, as we've already been talking, it's going to involve sacrifice quite often, as in Luke chapter 21, verse 4, says, this is about the widow and her two mites. Jesus said that she has put in more than you all. Because for all these out of the abundance have put in offerings for God, but she, out of her poverty, put in all the livelihood that she has. She put in everything she has. And that was out of an unselfish, generous heart, because her care was more and concern was more for the need of others than for herself. It was a matter of sacrifice in her case. And then in 1 Kings 17... verse 13 through 15. This one says, this is about the when Elijah was living with the woman that of Zarephath. And he said to her, "Do not fear, go and do as you have said, but make me a small cake from it first and bring it to me, and afterward make some for yourself and your son." When she had just told him that all she had is a handful of flour and a little oil in a jar. That's all she's got. So she does. She says, "Thus says the Lord God." Thus says the Lord God of Israel, that the bin of flour shall not be filled up, nor shall the jar of oil run dry, until the day the Lord sends rain on the earth. So she went away and did according to the word of Elijah, and she and her household ate for many days. So that's a matter of she made that sacrifice because it was enjoined upon her by Elijah. He trusted God, and she did too, because that's what he told her. She knew he was a prophet of God. And she trusted God and did what he said, and he was proved right, because she did not go hungry. She didn't have to build that fire, you know, to die by. All right, now let's go to Philippians.
Before we leave 2 Philippians 8,
yes, ma'am.
I find it interesting that when Paul is talking to the Corinthians, he uses Macedonia, you know, mm-hmm. of course, out of their deep poverty. But it jumped out to me this time when I was reading their abundance of joy and their deep poverty. They were happy. And not only that they were saved, but evidently their joy was in so much that they were being saved. They wanted to help others. You know, they had all these blessings, and but they were poor. But they had this joy serving God and serving, you know, in any way they could. And, you know, sometimes we may do things and it's begrudgingly. We don't really want to think ourselves as doing it that way, but we're mumbling somewhere underneath our breath, you know.
Or at least in our head.
Or say, "Oh, no, not again," you know. And it's terrible to have to confess, but anybody else, but I'm
doing it. Oh, I'm sure we've all been there.
And so,
but you're right, that doesn't exhibit any joy at all.
Attitude adjustment there.
That is a good point. I didn't put that down here, that we ought to have, a true servant ought to be serving with joy. I think that's excellent. Okay, let's now look at Philippians 4:13. And that verse, Sally, you want to read that, please?
I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me.
Okay, how does this translate to a real servant?
Positive thinking.
Positive thinking, excellent. Confidence that we can do it, you know, and God will take care of us when we do. He gives us the strength to do whatever we need to be doing. And we just need to rely on Him and trust Him to do what He says He's going to do, which is watch over us. You know, we're more important to Him than any bird or lily or flower in a field. We are His children and His heirs. All right, go over to chapter 2, verse 3 and 4. Linda, you want to read that one? Yes, ma'am.
Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interest, but also the interest of others.
Okay, what'd you put here?
Sacrificing self for others.
Okay.
Looking, being alert too. You know, sometimes we just sort of, you know, go with blinders on and we don't see what's going on and we don't see the need and those kind of things, you know. But if we're to do this, you know, we're to be kind of selfish. Maybe we'll be more on the alert of what we can do.
Okay.
And things that we can do.
Okay. Anybody else? Susan? Philippians 2, 3, and 4. What about consideration and sympathy for the needs of others? Or maybe empathy is the right word. Esteem others better than yourselves is obviously humility as well. But if we don't see others' needs as just as at least just as important as ours, if not more, then there's an issue there. But we need to have consideration for others' feelings, for others' needs and wants, for other people's struggles. You know, maybe they're having a tough time with something.
This is where I have. Sometimes we might need to change our plans, like we were talking a while ago.
Yes.
Sometimes we don't like to change our plans. We don't want to do that.
Right.
That may be what's involved.
That's right. In Romans 15, everyone pleasing his neighbor leads to edification. In other words, if you put pleasing your neighbor involves, you know, putting their needs and wants above your own, and that edifies everybody. Anybody that sees that happen is edified. I'm edified. That person's edified. And then, obviously, the humility here. This is a passage about Jesus. Well, it's fixing to be about Jesus because it's going to be talking about Jesus leaving heaven and taking the form of a human being and emptying himself, which we'll talk about later on. But, you know, if we take his mindset and empty ourselves of, like Sandra said, okay, yeah, I had plans to go to a movie, but, you know, I can, or go do something with some friends, say. Maybe we need to change that because somebody else needs me. Somebody really needs me. And this is something I've seen Steve especially do for a long, long, long time. Long time. When his kids were young and at home, he had to leave a lot. And I'm not saying other people here haven't done that. I know they have. But that really sticks in my mind because I used to feel kind of sorry for his kids. But they seem to have turned out pretty good. It doesn't seem to have hurt them. You know, we all have to be prepared to do that. That the time may come when we have to do that.
You know, Paul, through this reading in Philippians 4 and even in Philippians 1:12, he talks about his circumstances and his contentment. And sometimes we make excuses because of our circumstances that we don't reach out to others. And then in verse 12 of chapter 1, he says, I want you to know that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel. And so, and then when he gets to chapter 4, you know, whether I'm hungry or whatever, you know, I can do all things. He still endured. He still served the Lord. He did his work and everything. It didn't matter what circumstances were. You saw like the Macedonian brethren. They were poor, yet by their ability, they did what they could. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can be, and we need to have contentment in what we're blessed with, and still, but use those things and use ourselves, even when we're in maybe dire straits ourselves, you know. And not make an excuse for that.
Back to talking about changing our plans. I think funerals is a good example of that. Who can ever plan a funeral? Valerie really impressed me the week of Christmas. She and her family and Alyssa and her family were all at my house all week. And she and Jeremy left Wednesday morning to go to the funeral of a mother of one of their members. It was down at Norhill. And she didn't know the lady, but the woman, that actually she knew the daughter and two of the granddaughters. And she just felt like it was important to be there. And I thought that was pretty impressive that, you know, I know she'd rather have been back with us. But and Charles's funeral, was that the most inconvenient time for a funeral ever? But that was a very big deal, a very big deal, I think, to be at that funeral and to show Bridget what kind of people Charles was a part of. And, you know, I know people had plans. I know several people that had plans that night. And they went anyway. Went to the funeral first. So, and that makes impressions on people. You just never know. And back to the humility thing in 1 Peter 5:5, how does God look upon the humble and the not so humble? In 1 Peter 5:5 and actually several other places, how does God look upon the humble and on the not so humble? What does he think about the proud?
Not much.
Not much. That's a good way to put it. Of course, the real words aren't coming to me, of course. God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. That particular quotation is from Proverbs 3:34. But I know it's other places in the New Testament. Humility is, I think, I don't know if you could even rank them, you know, the qualities that God looks for in his people, but humility is, I think, beyond one of the most important. Pride is a devastatingly dangerous sin, or some quality to have. A very ugly quality to have. It is. And if we don't work on being humble, then it would be so easy to end up in the pride category. Especially people with a certain kind of personality. It's some people have to fight it more than others, just like some people have to fight eating sugar more than others. But it's just something that pride just better not be there.
I think that Philippians 2:4. Yes.
Yes.
And I think that's important that we need to take advantage of that. Look not on every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others.
Right. He's not saying to ignore our own priorities or our own issues or our own to-do lists or anything like that. And that's a very good point. They're there. They're always going to be there. But more important than that is looking out for others, putting others first.
People were selling their lands and houses. It wasn't the land and the house they were living. It was extra they had. Barnabas. They were not encouraged and even adding out this fire. They didn't have to give the whole thing.
Right. They weren't asking them to give up everything and then be dependent on the church for a livelihood. Yeah, that's not. Yes, you're right. They would have been back where they started. So
supply the needs of others, not put yourself in need.
Okay. Anybody else have a comment up to this point?
The only thing I would say about that is sometimes our needs are not really needs. We consider them need, but it's not really.
Right.
You mentioned going out to eat while we're going.
Well, that was a joke.
I know.
Okay.
We went for years and never went out to eat.
Same here.
And now we eat out a lot. But
But it's not because we need to.
It's no.
It's because we do.
And well, and you can.
If we have, yes.
When you have small kids, you usually can.
Yeah, well, it's not very fun anyway.
Who knows?
But the thing is, if I had to do without eating out ever again, I could do that.
Yeah.
But if there's no, I don't feel like I have to give that up totally just to prove that I can.
No, but the day may come when you do.
That's right.
You know, you never know when that day may come when you can't do it anymore. So that is just one of those things. That is a luxury that we all enjoy, that some of us have to be more careful with it than others. But that's just an example of something that we might have to give up.
And that's something also that when we go out to eat, we may ask someone we know can afford and take them. Just so
I think that's a wonderful idea.
People. And, you know, I may have to eat out one time less this month if it costs too much, if they got a bunch of kids or whatever.
I saw, I hope this doesn't upset her, but I saw Nonya Piggy buy Betty's lunch one Sunday, and I it touched me so much because I know Nonya has nothing. It really was an example to me. Okay, we're going to have to stop there. I was really kind of hoping to finish the... Is this the first lesson? Yep.
And we are at number 5.
Yes, we'll start there next week. Thank you all so much.